right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today's March 5th, 2026, and we have got our first grumblings of energy shortages coming from Asia. That didn't take long. It's only been a few days since the missiles started flying, and we're already hearing about supply disruptions. So we've got a slew of headlines. We got one really good article that kind of captures everything. Things like shipping fuel or bunkering fuel, some might call it, cooking gas, already starting to see supply curtailed there. In Singapore, which is a very busy port for ships refueling, that's right next to a major trade choke point. Singapore has said they're only going to be partially filling ships from previously agreed contracts, that there's just not enough shipping fuel coming in ever since the Strait of Hormuz was closed, not closed. By the way, it's kind of silly, this whole argument about the Strait of Hormuz being closed or not closed. There's semantic arguments going on Twitter between economic and geopolitical people about, oh, it's closed, or no, they said it's not closed, or this guy said they closed it. Who cares? They're blowing up boats that try to fly through it. You can put an open sign next to a burning ship, and I don't think that makes the next captain want to sail through. So let's stop arguing about whether it's closed or not. Moving on, we've got China has suspended exports of diesel and gasoline. Not just, hey, don't sign any new contracts, but they've actually told their refiners to cancel existing contracts for exports. So the Chinese are hoarding the fuel they have. China buys most of the Iranian oil that flowed through the Strait of Hormuz. South Korean petrochemical plants, they're declaring force majeure. They can't get enough feedstock to meet their previously declared items. So you can add South Korean petrochemical plants to Bahraini aluminum plants, Qatari LNG plants, and I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody else, declaring force majeure due to supply disruptions in the Strait of Hormuz. By the way, speaking of South Korea, the KOSPI Index just had its best day in two decades after having its worst day ever the day before on Tuesday, and a pretty bad day before that. So the volatility in South Korean stocks remains a big thing. Look, they're trying to come up with a reason why the South Korean exchange was up so much yesterday. They're saying, oh, this rumor of people in Iran reaching out about peace talks, which apparently was like this BS story that was circulating yesterday. And also they're saying statements that from Iranian foreign minister that the Strait of Hormuz was open. Oh, good. We're back on that topic. That was why South Korean stocks rallied so much. No, I think both of those stories were probably rather doo-doo. And I think South Korean stocks are rallying like crazy because that market is an over-levered mess and the volatility's got to sort itself out. So I wouldn't be declaring the all clear in South Korean stocks just yet. Back, though, on the subject of fuel disruptions, India is once again buying Russian oil. Now, that's not terribly surprising. India stopped buying the Russian oil, and they started buying Venezuelan oil as part of the trade deal that they signed with the Trump administration. Trump really wanted them to stop buying the Russian oil, which was being used to finance the war in Ukraine. He threatened them with higher tariffs. Well, then the Supreme Court came and struck down those tariffs. Okay, that kind of took away your stick. And at the same time, now they can't get any oil out of the Strait of Hormuz, which India also is a major purchaser of Middle East oil. So they're like, yeah, I'm going to start buying the Russian oil again. So that's flowing into India. By the way, on the tariff subject we just mentioned there, a trade court judge has ordered the Trump administration to refund the IEEPA tariffs after the Supreme Court struck them down a few weeks ago. No big surprise there. We kind of knew that was coming. Well, that's official now. We've also got Japanese refineries. They have asked the government to start releasing fuel from their strategic petroleum reserve. All right, well, that's a page out of the Biden playbook. We haven't done that here yet. We're not even talking about doing that here yet because we produce a ton of oil here in this country, but I wouldn't put it past them to do it. By the way, they missed the window to refill the SPR like they should have done. Anyways, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in Japan is now on the table. They haven't agreed to do it, but the refiners are asking for it. We just had a tanker in Iraq was hit today. Now, this is important because that tanker in Iraq, this is the furthest from the Strait of Hormuz where a ship has been hit yet. And it was hit by what they think was a remote control surface drone, basically a drone boat, We've seen the Ukrainians use these to great effect against the Russian Navy in the Black Sea. Now the Iranians are using it against commercial shipping in the Gulf. That is a new development, a new tactic. I don't know if this is the first of a wave or if it's just a one-off, but that is something that is different from the last couple of days. Also, the use of energy as a weapon, it is not just happening in the Middle East. We've got the European Union is now scrambling to both pay for and perform repairs on a key Ukrainian oil facility that was hit by the Russians back in January and has been shut down ever since. Now, that facility is, of course, the European Union is like, yeah, all of a sudden we have a greater sense of urgency to repair that Ukrainian oil facility now that the Strait of Hormuz is a thing. But that facility primarily supplies oil to Slovakia and Hungary. And that's important. The Slovakians and the Hungarians, or do you say the Slovaks? I don't know. The people in those two countries are rather upset. They are accusing the Ukrainians of dragging their feet on the repairs there. The facility burned for 10 days. It's hard to tell how long it's going to take you to fix it if you can't even put the fire out in 10 days. But you tend to have more hostile governments in Slovakia and Ukraine. They're more friendly to the Russians. So in the European Union, they're threatening to hold up loans to the Ukrainian military, as well as hold up any additional sanctions against the Russians until that facility is repaired. And so you've got a lot of internal EU politics at play around this facility, and that has just been aggravated dramatically because of what has now gone on in the Middle East. Also, in the commodities realm, this is an interesting story. It's not a huge number, but this is a first. The United States is going to be buying gold from Venezuela. Trafigura has cut a deal to bring they mentioned the number. It's about $160 million worth of gold from Venezuela will be sold to refiners in the United States. It's not a huge number for the United States. It is a significant number for the Venezuelans. It's about a tenth of a percent of GDP, the amount cited in this deal. And it shows further tightening of trade ties between the two countries that, hey, a few months ago, we were like blowing their stuff up and grabbing their president out of his bed. So cutting a deal to buy gold from them, you can see how relations with Venezuela are kind of trending in the right direction. And again, that's got a lot to do with what's going on in Iran right now as well. We've got also some NVIDIA news. They're pretty much done. This is interesting. NVIDIA has said yesterday that this latest $30 billion investment in OpenAI and the $10 billion that they invested in Anthropic, that's pretty much it. Since those countries are expected to IPO later this year or at some point, I don't know if they'll ever IPO. You have to let the world see your books if you're going to IPO. And boy, would I just love to get my hand on that one. But, you know, this is a far cry from the $100 billion or up to $100 billion that NVIDIA had advertised they were going to invest in OpenAI alone. And it begs the question, is the investor capital into this AI bubble now finally starting to slow? If NVIDIA is not buying their own chips, who is? The hyperscalers are still spending big. I expect the first hyperscaler to announce CapEx cuts any day now. Guys, this bubble is on borrowed time. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. We also got Broadcom earnings, ticker AVGO. They reported a doubling of their AI chip sales. That stock is up this morning, although it is off its highs. Broadcom kind of has a case of the NVIDIAs where you could post near perfect results and still not impress the market because the market is expecting perfection. And speaking of the AI bubble, President Trump, now I've been talking about this for a couple of months now about how the political blowback on the AI bubble will come back to haunt President Trump and how it's going to be a very big deal, especially as we get closer and closer to the midterms. CNBC has got an article today that says Trump has a data center problem. By October, data center will be a four-letter word. And that's probably going to be made even worse, especially if oil prices keep going higher, if gasoline prices start going up and affordability becomes an even bigger issue than it is now. Yeah, the people driving up your electric bill, I don't care if they signed a pledge that says we pinky swear that we're not going to make your electric bill go up. They're going to do it anyway. That's how supply and demand works. And, you know, this Stargate thing attaching at the hip to the stock market bubble and this AI bubble, it will come back to haunt him politically. Been saying that for a while now. And last but not least, we've got more news about SRTs or synthetic risk transfers. Some people might call them significant risk transfers because they're avoiding the word synthetic and they don't want to bring back, you know, memories of synthetic CDOs. Either way, record issuance of SRTs again in 2025. This is how banks get the risk off of their balance sheets of loans that they never should have made in the first place and onto the balance sheets of unsuspecting pension investors. So we got more of that going on this morning. We got a lot to cover once again. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and that subscribe button, as well as your tickets to George Noble's Best Stock Ideas Summit, which will be next Wednesday, March 11th. Yours truly will be presenting at that link down below, should you feel so inclined. The S&P 500 is down 35 points, or a half of 1%, a somewhat muted move compared to what we've seen before the bell over the last couple of days. The Dow is off by 368 points, or 0.75%, a little bit more than the S&P. And the NASDAQ is down a little more than 0.5%, 136 points in the red. So we've got all three indexes are red this morning here in the States, but we had a lot of green in Korea yesterday. The Korean market has just gone bonkers. Korea leads emerging market rebound with Iran driving volatility. The best day on South Korea's stock market in nearly two decades is leading a recovery in emerging market equities as signals that Iran may be ready to reduce tensions in its six-day war with the U.S. and Israel boosted riskier assets. Again, that signal from Iran that they might be willing to talk. A lot of people put a lot of stock in that yesterday. I was very skeptical of that, and I think most people remain very skeptical of that. MSCI's developing nation equities rose 2.4% in London, with Seoul listed companies jumping 9.6%, the most since October of 2008. Oh, good, October of 2008. That was a great time. Anybody remember that? That still left the emerging market gauge down more than 6% on the week as war with Iran dented the past year's exuberance in emerging markets. News reports about Iran making overtures toward the U.S. on resolving the conflict are improving risk sentiment and steering global markets away from high-risk scenarios that would keep demand for emerging assets capped for longer. A report on Thursday saying that Iran had signaled it was ready to relinquish its uranium stockpiles initially lifted markets, but the moves faded in the absence of any quick signals from Washington. Trading remains very much headline-based in the current circumstances, analysts at KBC Group, including Matthias van der Jucht, wrote in a note. I apologize if I butchered your pronunciation there, Mr. Matthias. They also pointed to Iranian comments saying that the Strait of Hormuz remained open, boding well for keeping the world stocked with oil and gas from the Middle East. All right, so if you weren't already like immediately laughing about the stupidity of this whole story, that last sentence certainly should have you laughing, right? They're saying that optimism because a guy in Iran said the Strait of Hormuz is open. Oh, that's good news for markets, and that's why South Korea had the best day ever or the best day in 20 years. The Strait of Hormuz is not open, guys. The ship's burning in the freaking channel because they're launching drones and missiles and now drone boats at it. So, you know, this is a case of people are going to latch on to whatever news reinforces their pre-existing bias, and they're going to run with it. All right, the people who want this war to go bad will find no shortage of press releases from state Iranian media saying we sank an American aircraft carrier. They'll post that and they'll be like unconfirmed reports. Why? Because they almost want it to be true because they want it to go bad. Likewise, people who want to be like, oh, Kurdish militias are pouring into Iran from northern Iraq by the hundreds of thousands, right? Unconfirmed. Can anybody report that, right? That's not true either. So there's so much BS going on out there, guys. I would just say be very skeptical of what you read on Twitter about what's going on in the Middle East now. Know the source of the information, challenge it and scrutinize it. What's the reputation of that person? Is this person historically full of shit? Then they're probably still full of shit. Because this story about Korea, because the Strait of Hormuz is open, that's why we got this big green candle in the KOSPI index. No, guys, this is just volatility. The South Korean index was up 9.6%. Pretty much right back to where we were at the open the day before, which was also a big gap down. So South Korean stocks are still way down here. Until we start getting smaller candles, this isn't over. Looking over at the DXY right now, we have a stronger dollar once again this morning, 99.1, 29 basis points higher. Guys, if the dollar is strengthening, it probably means that news about the oil in the Strait of Hormuz being open, that was probably BS. We've seen the dollar strengthen quite a bit over these last few days, and it is quite a bit stronger today, putting downward pressure on assets. We've got yields are higher again. The 10-year has now made a pretty substantial move. The 10-year yield is up a little more than 20 basis points over the last couple of days. So we are, if in aggregate, although we haven't had any like big single day panics with double digit moves, if you add up the last few days, we're starting to get significant now. The 30-year yield, 4.757, higher by 4 basis points. The 10-year is up by 6 points and change, 4.145%. The 2-year yield is up by 4.5 points at 3.589%. And the 1 month is at 3.697, down a half a point. We've got Bitcoin is pretty much flat from where we ended the day yesterday, but Bitcoin had a fantastic day yesterday. Now at 72,500 is priced at Coinbase, off a little bit. If you're looking here, you probably noticed this red line that I've had drawn for a couple of days. We went pretty much right up to that red line and then rejected that level. If we zoom out on the chart, I'll show you that red line represented the low from the Liberation Day panic back in April, and that is the support becoming resistance or vice versa here. And that was also the high that we saw immediately following the release of the Bitcoin ETFs and just prior to the Bitcoin halving in 2024. So this roughly 74,000 level is technically significant here, and we did reject that level, and we're heading lower again. The fact that somebody out there went majorly risk on in Bitcoin on this news out of the Middle East kind of surprised me. The only thing I could think of is people trying to get their money the hell out of Dubai. Maybe they're buying Bitcoin, trying to leave with their money intact. That is, if they can pay somebody $250,000 for a seat on the few planes that are leaving that city. Meanwhile, we've got gold is a little bit lower this morning, $5,108, off by $32 or $33, 0.64% lower. April COMEX gold futures are at 51.17, lower by $16.50 or about a third of a percent. Spot silver is off by $1.22 or 1.39% lower at 82.37. May COMEX silver futures are at 82.50, off by about 75 cents or 0.9%. I'm not too worried about the red. I'm actually encouraged to see the small move here. I want this volatility in metals markets to go away so we can go back to like believing what these things are telling us. Either way, I still like the shiny. We're obviously way off our recent highs here, but I'm happy to see the volatility taking a breather today. Copper is down about 2%. Platinum is lower by a third of a percent. Palladium is off by 2.6%. And oil is sharply higher again this morning, up $3.60, or about 4.8% higher at $78.25 for WTI crude. Brent crude is up $2.80 at $84.23. Oil continuing to move higher. It's going to keep doing that. We'll look at the oil chart in a second, but I want to go back to gold for a second because we got this one. This is significant news, and I might even call this good news. And we occasionally dabble in optimism here on this channel. I don't know if you guys knew that. But Trafigura and the Venezuelan mining firm signed a deal for up to 1,000 kilograms of gold, Axios reports. This one broke about 12 hours ago. Venezuela's state-owned mining company has signed a multi-million dollar deal to sell as much as 1,000 kilograms of gold door bars to commodities trader Trafigura for U.S. markets, Axios reported on Wednesday, citing two sources familiar with the deal. The deal requires Venezuelan mining company Minervan to furnish 650 to 1,000 kilograms of gold door bars to Trafigura. Trafigura will ship the gold to U.S. refineries under a separate arrangement with the U.S. government. So some more trade between Venezuela and the United States. I would rather trade gold and dollars than missiles and bullets. So this is good news. Arguably, you could say this is good news at gunpoint, but it is good news, and it does show that when the shooting stops, you can just go back to doing business. So a little bit of optimism to wash down your coffee this morning. All right, back to the oil chart here. You can see, guys, oil still moving higher, $78 now. We've made quite a move, obviously, since this began. There was a little bit, when we saw this big red candle, there was a little bit of hope on the second day that maybe things would be calming down. when we saw oil moving lower after the open on Monday. But no, that didn't really last. We're now pretty much at our high of the week and still moving higher. And you're going to see that's probably going to continue for quite some time. Now, on the natural gas front, the market is settling down a little bit more here. Dutch TTF gas futures are at 49.32 euros per megawatt hour. Still well off the highs that we saw Tuesday morning at the open, down from yesterday. So natural gas, still some awfully big candles here. Markets are going to stay volatile, but at the very least, the gas market is tending to level off here as oil keeps grinding higher, even though I don't really see anything optimistic in the gas markets. I mean, that Qatari LNG is not going to get out of the strait. So I'm not really sure why prices are settling down here. Maybe optimism about repairing this facility in Ukraine might actually mean some of that Russian gas is going to start flowing too. We'll get to that story in just a minute. But here is the main news this morning. Asia's deepening oil crunch triggers fuel hoarding and price hikes. And this is all across Asia, not just China. A deepening energy crunch across Asia is impacting all corners of the oil market, with suppliers of everything from shipping fuel to cooking gas beginning to cut back on sales in order to manage shrinking stockpiles. A widening conflict in the Persian Gulf, which began on the weekend after U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran, has upended the energy trade by all but halting traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, the narrow waterway that connects some of the world's most important energy producers to their consuming markets. The impact has been swift, even for wealthy markets with extensive storage. Shipping fuel suppliers in Singapore, the world's top bunkering port, have informed customers that they will fulfill only part of agreed orders, citing lower volumes received from their own suppliers, according to people with knowledge of the matter. They asked not to be identified, of course. They never want to be identified. China has told its largest refiners to suspend exports of diesel and gasoline, asking them to refrain from signing new contracts and to cancel already agreed shipments. The world's top oil importer is only Asia's third fuel exporter, but the move reflects a race across the region to make domestic demand a priority. In South Korea, petrochemical producer Yeochun declared force majeure on some of its sales due to disruptions in the arrival of naphtha feedstock. Governments, meanwhile, are grappling with dwindling supplies of liquefied petroleum gas used in cooking, given disrupted deliveries from the Middle East, a key source of fuel for Asia. India, one of the most affected markets, is in talks with producers. Still, with U.S. cargoes too distant, there are few alternatives to replace lost volumes, meaning some countries could be forced to impose a form of rationing. We'll have more to say about India in a second here. Others are already considering tapping official stockpiles in Japan, which gets 90% of its crude from the Middle East. Oil refiners are asking the government to release crude from the nation's strategic petroleum reserves. Another concern for many economies are consumers in Asia is simply cost, as the scramble for cargoes has bid up everything from jet fuel to marine gas oil and sent prices to eye-watching levels. I don't know what eye-watching levels are. Maybe they meant to say eye-watering, probably a typo there. A methodology adjustment in the physical oil pricing mechanism run by Platts, a unit of S&P Global, has further underscored a surge that will hurt importing nations and consumers. Faced with these painfully high oil and fuel prices, Bangladesh is already preparing to reduce deliveries to petrol pumps and, among other measures, has asked citizens to avoid unnecessary private trips. All right, so we don't have signs at the gas station that says out of fuel yet, but you can see the world is heading that way. All kinds of supply curtailment going on, force majeure, contracts getting canceled, exports getting cut off. And then we got this one, Russian oil cargoes swing back to India as Iran war hits supply. Two Russian oil cargoes that had been signaling East Asia as a destination have switched to India, according to ship tracking data, suggesting New Delhi is becoming more willing to take the crude as the Middle East conflict worsens. Two tankers carrying around 1.4 million barrels of Urals oil combined are expected to discharge at Indian ports this week, after previously indicating that they were heading farther east, data from Kepler and Vortexis show. So much for that deal that will give you lower tariffs if you stop buying the Russian oil. Well, the Supreme Court kind of took care of the tariffs. Then they came back and said everybody gets 15%, which means if you're India, we're going to get 15% anyway. That's what we agreed to previously. Might as well start buying the Russian oil, especially now that they can't get it from the Middle East. And we've got a new attack. We talked about this one in the monologue. Oil tankers suffer explosion as risks spread wider into the Gulf. The news here is this is a different kind of attack, and it's in a different spot. It's further away than the previous one. So this could be an escalation, even though the South Korean market is all kinds of optimistic about things being open or overtures being made. An oil tanker suffered an explosion off the coast of Iraq, which damaged a tank that is losing water, signaling wider risk to shipping in the Persian Gulf beyond the Strait of Hormuz. The Sonangol Namibe was approached by a small boat near Khor al-Zubair. I'm sure I mispronounced something in there. This is in Iraq, and its crew later heard a loud bang, according to Sonangol Marine Services. It's the first incident that far north in the Persian Gulf since the U.S. and Israel began bombing Iran over the weekend. The company said there are no reports of any pollution, and there was no cargo on board, allaying earlier concerns that it could have been spilling oil. A UK naval group earlier reported that oil was seen in the water nearby. And they kind of show in this map here, let me zoom in a little bit. They're showing where this attack took place. I mean, this is pretty much as far from the Strait of Hormuz as you can get in the Persian Gulf. And it looks like it was hit by a drone boat. That's a new weapon in a new place targeting tankers in this conflict. And even as that's going on, we've got issues in Europe here. EU weighs aid to fix Ukraine oil link at center of loan delay. The European Union is considering providing Ukraine with financial help to repair the Druzhba oil facility as Hungary and Slovakia block support for Kyiv and sanctions on Russia until supplies through the pipeline resume. The European Commission, the bloc's executive arm, could release the support through the budgetary assistance that it provides Ukraine, according to people familiar with the matter. The EU is also prepared to provide expertise, said the people who spoke on condition of anonymity. The commission didn't respond to requests for comment. So the EU is saying, not only are we going to pay for it, but we'll send you the people to get this done. We really want this terminal back up and running. Russia attacked the facility in January, causing a storage tank fire that took 10 days to extinguish, damaging equipment, power cables, transformers, and a leak detection system. Ukraine state energy company Naftogaz CEO told Bloomberg in an interview last month, given the destruction's magnitude, Kyiv has not yet been able to provide a timeline for the repairs. Hungary and Slovakia have accused Ukraine of withholding supplies while questioning the extent of the damage. Neither nation has acknowledged the January Russian attack. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who's facing an election in April in which he's behind in the polls, said he'll block vital support to Kyiv, including 90 billion euros, or about $106 billion in EU loans, until flows are restored. Slovakia has halted emergency electricity supplies to the war-torn country. The two nations, which maintain close ties with the Kremlin, have also blocked the EU's latest round of sanctions against Moscow. So Russia blows up this oil facility. All of a sudden, there's no oil and gas making it to Slovakia and to Hungary, where arguably support for Ukraine was shaky at best. Hungary and Slovakia say no new electricity for Ukraine because of that. We're going to halt this loan. We're going to delay sanctions until you get this repaired. And now the EU takes a look at what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz, and they say, let's get this thing fixed. Here's money and people. Just get it done. This is energy being used as a weapon in World War III, guys, all over the place. The tankers, the depots, the refineries. This is the kind of thing Doomberg had been warning about a couple of years ago, even as everybody was making fun of the green chicken for being a doomer, which, you know, he kind of embraces the moniker, you may have noticed. He was also right about all of it. Weird. All right, switching gears to the AI bubble. NVIDIA CEO Huang rules out $100 billion open AI investment. Is this the end of capital flowing into the AI bubble? If NVIDIA is not buying their own chips, who will? NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang doesn't see his company's investments in OpenAI reaching the $100 billion mark, the maximum amount that the chip-making giant had once pledged to spend on the startup. But it's been hilarious watching Jensen Huang try to squirm out of that $100 billion number. I think the opportunity to invest $100 billion in OpenAI is probably not in the cards, said Huang in a Morgan Stanley conference in San Francisco on Wednesday. He cited OpenAI's plans to go public potentially by the end of the year. So this might be the last time we'll have the opportunity to invest in a consequential company like this. NVIDIA contributed $30 billion to a massive $110 billion funding round for OpenAI last month that valued ChatGPT creator at $730 billion. While it was the chipmaker's largest single bet on a startup to date, the investment fell far below the $100 billion in funding the company was considering as part of a pact with OpenAI in September. By the way, the financial press took that $100 billion number last fall and they just ran with it and bid up the stocks. That was like right around the peak of that Oracle insanity with the remaining performance obligations. And that was the top of the AI bubble. And I went short NVIDIA shortly after that. The smaller than anticipated investment stoked concerns about relations between the leading AI company and the world's dominant chip maker. But as recently as January 31st, Huang was describing OpenAI's work as incredible and called the firm one of the most consequential companies of our time. Huang said NVIDIA's recent $10 billion investment in OpenAI rival Anthropic was also probably the last one in that company. Anthropic, the maker of the Claude AI platform, has similarly laid the groundwork for its own IPO. So NVIDIA appears to be done buying their own chips by giving their customers the money they need to buy or rent their chips, at least the two big ones, OpenAI and Anthropic. NVIDIA stock is down about 0.75% this morning, $181.75, pretty much where it's been since August of last year. This stock has gone nowhere for 0.75. Also in AI news, we got Broadcom earnings yesterday, and they were pretty good, and it may not matter. Broadcom's AI business is booming, but the rest is complicated. Like NVIDIA, Broadcom is having a hard time impressing investors with blowout chip projections, and its software business is a drag. Perhaps the hardest thing about being in the AI chip business in 2026 is that big numbers don't seem that big anymore. Broadcom's numbers aren't as sizable as NVIDIA's, but the company, once known for the radio frequency chips it supplies to Apple, has built a strong AI chip business in its own right. Strong enough that the company said Wednesday that it has line of sight to sales from that business topping $100 billion in 2027. Broadcom's entire annual revenue now sits at just under $70 billion. But like NVIDIA, Broadcom is having a hard time impressing investors with such blowout projections. The company said AI chip revenue more than doubled on a year-over-year basis to $8.4 billion in the latest quarter. The company expects that revenue to hit $10.7 billion in the current quarter, 15% ahead of Wall Street estimates. And you can see in this chart here, this is showing Broadcom's revenue in orange or brown, whatever you want to call it there. That's their AI chip revenue. And then in blue is their software and their RFID business and everything else. And you can see all of Broadcom's growth for the last 3 years, 4 years has come from the AI chip business. And it's questionable how long that's going to last. And that's why they're having a hard time impressing people, even though they're putting up fantastic numbers. Now, Broadcom stock is up this morning. It's up 2.6% here, 2.4% at $325. This thing was up closer to 10% after hours yesterday. Once again, the FOMO bros pile in on a beat, not realizing this market doesn't care anymore, that they can tell this AI bubble is just about out of steam. Would not be surprised to see Broadcom close red today, trading at $325 and change. And also, we're not going to spend too much time on this one, guys, but Trump has an AI data center problem ahead of the midterms with no easy solutions. Now, the reason why I want to mention this, I mean, this article talks about the pledge from the AI companies that, oh, we pinky swear, we promise we're not going to drive up electricity bills, even though Sam Altman had his fingers crossed behind his back, according to people familiar with the matter who asked not to be identified. The point here is I've been talking about this for a while. Data center, it's going to be a four-letter word by this fall. The political blowback against data centers, it is not an environmental thing. It is not a NIMBY thing. It is an everybody thing. Literally freaking nobody outside of Sam Altman, Jensen Huang, and Donald Trump want these things built. They just don't. They don't add any freaking value to society whatsoever. They make all of our pre-existing problems worse. See also all the slop that's being peddled as war footage on Twitter these days. It drives up electricity bills that are already too high because of the inflation from the Fed's money printing. We've been talking about how this is going to be a big problem, and you can already see it. And it's ironic because this is CNBC, who has been the biggest freaking cheerleader for the AI bubble, the most grotesque waste of capital and the biggest accounting fraud in history. And now here's CNBC saying Donald Trump has a data center problem after CNBC did everything in their power to create this bubble. It's ironic, but you can see how nobody wants anything to do with this politically. So all these data center projects that are going to be built, all this insatiable demand for compute, where's it going to come from if NVIDIA is not going to pay for it? And the politicians aren't going to support it. It's not going to happen. This bubble is dead. Also, we got a judge orders U.S. Customs to process refunds on illegal Trump tariffs. This is not a surprise, so we're also not going to spend too much time on this one. This was largely expected. The Supreme Court did strike down those IEEPA tariffs, but they were silent on refunds of those who already paid tariffs. This is now a U.S. trade court has said the tariffs were unconstitutional. Therefore, you have to give the money back. The Trump administration is probably going to stall for time. They're going to ask for delays. They're going to say, oh, this is very complex. The judge is probably going to say, no, just give them their money back. But this has happened in the last couple of hours as well. No big surprises here. And last but not least, the banking risk from private credit. We've been talking about it for a while. These SRTs, this is another one of those cockamamie acronyms that Wall Street has created to hide what they're doing, transferring risk onto the balance sheets of unsuspecting investors. SRT sales hit record pace as banks expand use to hedge risks. And they'll always borrow this in finance or bury this stuff. They bury it in finance bro jargon to make it seem like it's all perfectly normal. It's not. They're ripping people off with this crap. Banks are issuing significant risk transfers at a record pace as they use the tool to hedge a wider range of loans, including leverage buyouts and fund financing. Lenders, mostly from Europe and North America, issued $41 billion of SRTs, or significant risk transfers or synthetic risk transfers, in 2025. That's up from $29 billion the previous year, according to credit investor Crescent Capital. That puts SRTs on track to grow more than 20% this year with no sign of deal delays from the conflict in the Middle East, said Juan Grana, the head of Bank Capital Solutions, he said to Bloomberg. Issuance of SRTs, a way for banks to insure loans against default, has now hit record volumes for 5 years in a row. Lenders including Deutsche Bank, ING, and NatWest have recently said they will increase sales, sending a signal that the asset class will continue to grow at a rapid clip. While some of the most active banks are consolidating their issuance activity, we see many newer entrants expanding their use, Grana said. Now you can see here this chart, 2020 through 2025, the issuance of SRTs has been increasing every single year, and it's accelerating as we go on. Loans to large corporates continue to be the most popular type of collateral used for SRTs, accounting for nearly half of the total. Lenders are increasingly referencing other types of debt with high yield. Think when you hear high yield, think dog shit. And leveraged loans now accounting for 11% of SRT issuance. Fund finance deals represented another 6%. Fund finance deals, that's basically net asset value financing, private equity firms raising money from other investors to pay off loans to old investors. Ponzi schemes, they're almost identical to Ponzi schemes. This is reflected, or that's reflected by regular issuer BNP Paribas recently completing an SRT tied to credit facilities for U.S. businesses or for U.S. business development companies known as BDCs. All right, the French bank has also been sounding out investors for two more tied to loans for wealthy clients and leveraged buyout financing. Now, BNP Paribas just issued a big SRT tied to business development companies, or BDCs. You may notice, guys, publicly traded BDCs have been getting destroyed recently after all of this blue owl and this private credit noise. And this is exactly what the banks are selling their risk from. They're trying to get that shit off their balance sheet. And who is buying that risk? It's almost always pension funds that buy it, because those pension funds have a huge duration mismatch between their demand for capital and their assets that they have. They have to go chase yield. They have no other choice, and they're buying this risky crap, which means the banks who never should have made these loans to begin with are getting the risk off their balance sheets and onto the pension funds. And they're doing it more and more every year. Again, SRTs, like the next Big Short movie, the next time we write books about how stupid we were, this is one of the acronyms that they're going to need Margot Robbie in a bathtub to explain to people. Which, by the way, don't threaten me with a good time. I'm just saying. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Nacho Man. What's going on, Nacho Man? He's first, and he knows Travis is coming. Like, these guys do that. They race to be first. Thank you, Nacho Man. I appreciate the speedy support of the channel this morning. Pasta Man is back. He says, BlackRock slashed the value of a private loan to Infinite Commerce Holdings to zero just 3 months after assessing it at 100%. And again, we're quoting the Big Short there, dog shit wrapped in cat shit. I went looking for this story this morning. I saw somebody had posted the Bloomberg Terminal screenshot of that, but it hasn't actually hit the press yet. But yeah, this is a loan in one of BlackRock's big marquee private credit funds. And according to filings from the end of last quarter, the end of December, they marked this down to zero when previously it was 100 cents on the dollar. So these perfectly legitimate marks, right, for these well-capitalized companies with low LTVs and, don't worry, rigorous underwriting standards and all the corporate gobbledygook that these muckety-mucks spout off on CNBC to reassure you, the retail investor, that everything's fine in private credit. A few months ago, it was 100 cents on the dollar. Now it's none. None cents on the dollar. Well, it's almost like these marks were never accurate to begin with. But you know what? I'm just a doomer. What do I know? Hey, Pasta, thank you for the, thank you for the very timely news update on this one. Again, you got to this one pretty much before the news outlets did. Appreciate the support of the channel, sir. Hey, Nacho Man's back again. He gifted 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you, Nacho Man. I appreciate it. Welcome, you new baby melons, to the Melon Patch. And be sure and say thank you to Nacho Man. But before you thank Nacho Man, you also have to thank KDM, who gifted 10 more. So we got 30 more baby melons this morning. Thank you, KDM. Thank you, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. You guys are awesome. I really appreciate that, as well as the support from Armando, who says this conflict might be good, no bubbles popping. Look, it's not to say no good could come from it. The jury's still out on that. There, some good could come from it. That being said, so far, no good has come from it. I won't miss the Ayatollah. Again, like, the hell with them. 50 years of terrorism, no thanks. That being said, like, you know, hey, guys, there's no shortage of historical examples of regime change operations in the Middle East not going so well. So the jury's still out. Some good could still come from it. That's a pretty tall order, though. Trying to stay optimistic here, Armando. I'm trying. Thank you for supporting the channel, sir. Madison Hype says, what are SRTs again? How are they used? And thanks. SRT, depending who you ask, synthetic risk transfer or significant risk transfer. All right. Banks, when they have these risky loans on their books, the regulators say you need to hold some capital in reserve. You need to keep money in your piggy bank just in case those loans go bad. And because those loans are risky, you need to keep more money than you would some of the other types of loans that you issue. These are risky loans. So one of the ways that the banks get that risk off their balance sheet without selling the loan, that's important. They could just sell the loan, but it's hard to find buyers for these loans. So instead, they created the synthetic risk transfer. They created an insurance policy where somebody, typically a pension fund, will set a large amount of cash aside in escrow, and that cash is insurance against the loan defaulting. Now the bank has that cash, so there's the capital buffer that the bank needs. In exchange for that capital buffer, the bank pays the pension fund a regular interest rate. And at the end of a predetermined amount of time, as long as the loan hasn't defaulted, the pension fund gets that cash back. They keep the dividends that they were paid. And so it's a way that the pension fund gets paid while the bank is able to free up capital to go out and make more loans. The problem is what it's done is it's taken that risk from a loan that you could argue never should have been made, and it transfers that risk to grandma's pension fund, where it doesn't belong. Pensions aren't supposed to be invested in risky dog shit. So it's creative financing. And you know, the closer you get to these bubbles bursting, the more creative and the more complex these mechanisms get, the more acronyms they have to pull out of thin air. And that's how you get an SRT. It's all about how they dump the risk of toxic sludge the same place it always ends up in retirement funds. Thank you, Madison, for the support of the channel. Real Estate Mindset, my buddy Travis says he's last. I don't think so, Travis. I don't think so. I'm grateful for the support of the channel. But you and Nacho Man have your dueling lasts going on once again. Thank you, Travis. Thank you, Nacho Man. And we got a red one here. That's a big one from Wiblin. Thank you so much for the generosity, Wiblin. I really appreciate that. He says, thanks for keeping us informed. Well, Wiblin, thank you very much for making neither Travis nor Nacho Man last. And I really appreciate the generosity. You're very welcome. Thank you, sir. And last but not least, we've got Nacho Man. He says he's last. All right, Nacho. I'm going to go ahead and hit the music. So you are last until proven otherwise. Thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads today. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button or your tickets to Jordan Opel's conference on Wednesday next week, where I'll be presenting. Links are down below, along with links to Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee memberships. Thank you to all my magnanimous Melon Heads in those categories. Travis says he is now last as well. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.